Hello. Thank you all. My name is Alex Shadoff, and I do want to acknowledge my collaborator on this project, Joshua Neferatos, who's also a medical student at the Cleveland Clinic. My life's not that interesting. I don't have any financial or commercial disclosures, unfortunately. It would probably help with medical school, but for the future, I suppose. So what we're going to talk about today is allostatic load, which has largely been applied to chronic diseases in the past. And so allostatic load, the way I think of it, or the way this project was conceptualized, was really on a health continuum, specifically the causes of health continuum, which I like to think that Lincoln Phelan introduced really in a nice format in 1995 in their paper. And what they did is they kind of set up what you can see up there, this idea that distal causes of health, such as race or income, neoliberalism, if you want to go that far upstream, cause individuals to act a certain way or to have certain health behaviors, whether that's a dietary choice or whether that is living in a certain area without access to quality foods or smoking on breaks because of one's limitations in terms of the job prospects that he or she can get, and how those eventually cause a health outcome. So, for example, an individual may have is not able to gain a lot of education. They therefore go to and work in manufacturing. Part of the social experience of working in manufacturing is taking a smoke break every several hours. Taking a lot of smoke breaks causes a lot of smoking, causes increased risk for everything from lung cancer to burst aneurysm, and therefore you get your eventual health outcome, the most distal cause of health, the fundamental cause of health having been that low education in the first place. And what Lincoln Phelan really focused on is this idea that it's about purposeful use of resources, that I can purposely use my education, I can purposely use my income to eventually impact my proximal causes of health, which can be numerous, right? It doesn't just need to be smoking. It could be working shift work, and we know, you know, the aging effects that has in the brain, but through multiple pathways causing poor health. And now in their papers and in subsequent discussions, which, you know, largely accept this upstream model of health, you hear a lot about chronic disease, and perhaps it's because we're in the United States and chronic disease is really important. You hear a lot about chronic disease, but you don't hear as much about how these distal causes of health can cause infectious disease, and you don't hear of a mechanism. In fact, in Lincoln Phelan's 1995 paper, they mentioned stress and the potential role it has on causing chronic disease only once as one reference. So what this paper decided to, or what this project decided to do, is look at how does this distal cause of health potentially bypass a proximal cause and simply elicit a physiological response in the body. And this idea kind of takes that fundamental cause of health framework, puts in some of the work that individuals like Dr. Sapolsky has done, Dr. Marmot did with relative inequality and its effects not only on health outcomes but also the actual biomarkers in the body and what happens when one experiences a certain social condition, when one experiences relative inequality, and puts it into practice and says, can we identify those physiological responses in the body? Can we measure them, and can we use them to inform practice perhaps one day? So with that in mind, kind of what is this example of these physiological responses? Well, we hear about them a lot in chronic diseases. For example, you know, it's unsurprising that when your HPA axis is off, when you're releasing a lot of adrenaline and catecholamines, you counter the effects of insulin. And when you counter the effects of insulin, you get a Cushing's-like syndrome, right? You get not only type 2 diabetes, but redistribution of body fat, and therefore all of the health associations of problems that are associated with a Cushing's disease or Cushing's syndrome. Similarly, you can imagine how sympathetic overdrive, overly active beta adrenergic stimulation of the heart can increase not only heart energy consumption, can cause increased contractility, can cause hypertension, and therefore lead to heart disease and coronary artery disease. It's well explored, and so you can imagine how stress, which would both increase catecholamines, it would also increase the sympathetic activity in the body, can lead to these health problems. And in fact, they've been well explored in allostatic load, which is focused on measuring this physiological response, applying biomarkers to a physiological response, and then correlating it with a health outcome. When we look at the components that make up allostatic load, and they very much are secondary or primary measures of those things, we see a clear correlation with chronic disease. But infectious disease, as we all know in here, can also very much be impacted by HPA overdrive or HPA sympathetic uncoupling, along with sympathetic overdrive itself. For example, we know that cortisol is an antihistamine. We know without histamine, you're going to have decreased vascular permeability, decreased vasodilation, and decreased extravasation of immune cells to go and fight infection. So we know that stress and cortisol, which is one of the primary measurements that people use to measure one's stress response, are directly impacting infectious disease. We also know that a prolonged sympathetic overdrive can have immunomodulatory effects, specifically decreasing the immune response and decreasing T cell proliferation, whereas perhaps short-term stress can actually increase T cell activity and natural killer cell activity. Long-term stress and sympathetic overdrive is actually a mechanism by which the body can at times taper that response, and we know with individuals who are suffering from rheumatoid arthritis that sympathetic overdrive in fact helps to explain some of the reason that symptoms can get a little bit better with overactivity of the sympathetic nervous system. So this project, based on this understanding that infectious disease might very much be impacted by, or specifically communicable disease, very much impacted by immune system regulation, which is not new, decided to say, how does allostatic load fit into this picture? And allostatic load, again, just for those of you who may not be as familiar with it, is just this idea that anytime your body is faced with a stressor, it has a normal response, right, up and down. Fight off the problem, return to normal. Fight off the problem, return to normal. If it is dysregulated, and that can occur in many ways, you can have adverse health effects. So you can imagine that you're constantly stimulating it, and that's because you are constantly being stressed. You stimulate it once, but because you have reset your body to a point where it's unable to reset, you continue it for a prolonged period of time at an increased stress level, meaning increased acute phase reactants, increased C-reactive proteins, and other chemicals of that nature, cytokines and chemokines. And then finally, you can imagine that it just the stress response doesn't work at all, which you could imagine has its own host of problems. But for allostatic load, what we're really looking at is the bottom left graph there, which is this idea that you're going to have a load of stress, a load of biological response, even when you are not being stressed. And this is going to induce a wear and tear on the body. And we know it for chronic diseases, as I explained. But the question is, does it relate to infectious disease the same way it relates to chronic disease? And the literature is relatively silent on that topic. Many large-scale studies have shown allostatic load has been used to kind of support the weathering hypothesis that Geronimus kind of put forward. We also know in the Boston Puerto Rican study that came out a few years ago that allostatic load can be correlated and increased stress response can be correlated with a number of chronic diseases ranging from diabetes to heart disease, coronary artery disease. But when you look at stress and you look at measurements of stress and ways of different measuring stress and infectious disease and communicable disease specifically, you see much smaller studies and you don't see allostatic load being used. You see stress inventories linking some infectious diseases to presentation of symptoms. You see studies that link EBV antibodies to specific life events that cause stress. And of course, there's limitations here because so many individuals are being are exposed to EBV anyway, and one must question, you know, does this matter if they're not showing symptoms? Is their, you know, risk of Burkitt's lymphoma actually going to go up if they had an early life stress event and therefore have EBV in childhood? These studies really stop there and kind of just point out that maybe stress and maybe a self-reported life event has something to do with infection. What we decided to do instead was look at how allostatic load correlates with this idea of infection, trying to go one step further with a larger sample and a more fleshed out idea that's been reported in the literature previously. So what we did was we took NHANES 4, 1999 through 2002, individuals who were 15 to 85. We also did a sensitivity analysis using only individuals who were 18 to 65. And we took both the clinical and physical examination markers for these subjects and calculated allostatic load. So our independent variable in this analysis was calculating group allostatic load index. And what that is, if you look to the table on the right, That is finding all of these primary or secondary markers of inflammation in the body, what we would expect if the body was in a stress state. We did not have any of the primary markers, which would include epinephrine, norepinephrine, DHEA, but the secondary effects of those, so when you have a catecholamine rush, you're going to expect higher blood pressure, et cetera. And taking that and assigning a point value based on whether a 1 or a 0, based on whether an individual falls above or below a cutoff, specifically within the population distribution, if they're above the 75th percentile for things such as systolic blood pressure or for things such as albumin, which we know can drop in inflammatory situations in the body, if they're below a 25th percentile. Adding up these individual components and creating an overall score. So this score for 10 components would range from 0 to 10. If 0 being that they were all within normal range, not above the 75th percentile, not below the 25th percentile at any time. And the obviously you could go up to 10, meaning you're in a hyperinflammatory state, more or less. Our outcome of interest, and this is kind of a proxy measure, also came from NHANES, obviously, and had to do with self-reported symptoms of a communicable disease, meaning symptoms of an upper respiratory tract infection or symptoms of a passing acute gastrointestinal illness within the past month. And we looked, essentially using multivariable logistic regression, at whether or not allostatic load was related in any way to this self-reporting of symptoms. We collapsed this index from have sign of infection, do not have sign of infection, combining both the kind of gastrointestinal problems as well as the flu-like illnesses or upper respiratory tract infections. And so this is just a kind of summary of our demographics, a condensed version of our demographics. From individuals who had symptoms or who did not have symptoms, symptoms present or absent, were actually remarkably similar in terms of demographic characteristics. The only difference was that symptoms in individuals who did not have symptoms of a communicable disease at any time in the past month, prior to NHANES asking them this question, they were slightly older, 38.3, but nothing too significant. With regard to our regression analysis, what we did find was that when controlling for age, sex, income, race, and education, which has been done previously in the literature when testing allostatic load, we found that individuals who were at the lowest level of allostatic load compared to the individuals who had higher allostatic loads, they were much more likely at the lower levels to not report symptoms than they were at the higher levels. So there was a large increase in the individuals reporting symptoms. You can take this as they had higher allostatic load markers. And for those of you questioning, well, yeah, if you have an infection, would you have an elevated, you know, C-reactive protein and other inflammatory markers? Most of those are not. Most of these infections would be local. They would not be systemic infections. You're not talking about bacteremia. And therefore, most of those markers would, a lot of those markers would not necessarily increase to the level that they would be picked up above a 75th percentile in the population. And furthermore, even if they were, it would only be if they happened to get a blood test while they were acutely ill. C-reactive protein is known to normalize within 2 to 4 days after an infection. So even if these individuals did have a cold, it was increasing their C-reactive protein. That C-reactive protein was increasing to the level that it was above the 75th percentile in the population. They would have to then be tested at the time that they were sick, and I don't we don't believe that really impacts this trend very much of increasing allostatic load correlating with increased risk or increased odds specifically of reporting a communicable disease symptom in the past month. So what does this mean? Well, it is an exploratory study is what it means, first of all. It does add to the body of literature suggesting that stress and communicable diseases are linked. The literature, while it's great on an epidemiological level and showing that individuals who report stress tend to have more colds, or people who are put in a hotel room and report being stressed are more likely to leave that hotel room with a cold. We don't, or upper respiratory tract infection more generally. There's not great evidence looking at the biomarkers specifically, at least not in large studies. Most studies are limited by maybe a couple hundred people at most, and this study can use 10,000 individuals. It also suggests that allostatic load calculations can be a good proxy measure. It's matching up with what the literature has told us about stress and disease. Can be a nice measure if individuals want to explore stress and communicable disease risk in the future, allostatic load may be cheaper, for example, than culturing anytime an individual has an upper respiratory tract infection and then doing blood tests on interleukins and various cytokines, because a lot of the data points when we need to calculate allostatic load are or are easily obtainable or could be easily implemented in national data sets, and Haynes being one of them. But you can actually calculate the same exact measure using British data sets and French data sets. They all tend to collect them, and you could imagine very interesting comparisons cross-culturally. And they also provide another potential mechanism for the manifestation of health disparities. So we know that individuals who are poor, individuals who are in relatively disadvantaged situations, tend to have higher allostatic loads, and specifically the gap between the haves and have-nots as time goes on, the weathering hypothesis, actually widens. And so we can imagine that if allostatic load and stress are specifically correlated with communicable disease, and certain individuals are more likely to have that higher stress, we can imagine that certain individuals would be more likely to have to take sick days for work for upper respiratory tract infections or gastrointestinal illnesses. And because estimates put communicable diseases, the simple communicable diseases, like an upper respiratory tract infection, it costs in the United States hundreds of millions to billions of dollars a year, interventions targeted specifically at those who are considered high stress may be a really good use of public health money. Implementing yoga, for example, in institutions where individuals who are perhaps more disadvantaged, you know, may really cut not only sick days and not only, quality of life, may improve those things, it really could actually save money for the health system potentially. Obviously, this is an exploratory study, and that's more amusing than a proven fact at this point. And, you know, lastly is we need to think about antibiotic resistance and prescribing. Recently in the Annals of Internal Medicine, a paper came out from the VA showing the variations of prescription prescribing patterns, and they specifically showed that some physicians will prescribe an antibiotic for upper respiratory tract infections for nearly 100% of the patients that come and see them for a variety of reasons, and there's currently research going on into why is there this variability. We know that that can drive antibiotic resistance. We know that it can drive dangerous side effects such as C. diff. That can drive up healthcare costs in other areas. So does understanding the mechanism that makes one, you know, at increased risk for a communicable disease, if we can lower the number of people simply going to the physician's office, are we going to kind of vicariously, are we going to indirectly, I should say, impact these other markers of public health such as infectious, such as drug resistance? Of course, there are limitations of the study. We didn't use any primary mediators of allostatic load. We don't know that someone was experiencing a sympathetic overdrive. We simply looked at, we know that, for example, we're going to see with a sympathetic overdrive an increased blood pressure, and therefore patients that were hypertensive in this study were kind of almost considered that it was because of stress rather than some other cause. There's always reverse causality with allostatic load. Do these individuals, you know, we mentioned with the C-reactive protein, did they have these high allostatic loads because they were sick, or are they sick because they have these high allostatic loads? And it is definitely something to consider, though. Again, I mentioned that many of these acute phase reactants are not necessarily going to rise to the level that they would be above our cutoff in this study if it wasn't part of the infection process. And finally, I do want to mention that equal weighted formulas might underestimate the association between a allostatic load and its outcome measures, and that's been shown in previous studies. So it's possible that the odds ratios that you saw may actually be underestimating the effect size. And then lastly, I do just want to point out that, again, this study does not speak necessarily to the exact molecular mechanisms that cause stress to become embodied as disease, or specifically a communicable disease. And I point to a Pittsburgh study done at the University of Pittsburgh, that looks specifically at, is T cell function impaired in individuals who have high stress? Are natural killer cells impaired in individuals who have high stress? And then look at, again, the cytokines and say, do we see high levels of IL-1, IL-6, IL-8 in individuals who report high stress? And is this causing a burnout of the immune system in some way, or immunomodulatory effects that could therefore explain why we're seeing the effects of increased stress and usually a lot of times decreased social network density, so decreased support networks, which can therefore lead to increased stress. Can we actually see the direct mechanism of these biological indicators of the immune system and the communicable disease itself? And the answer is not really. Every time, a lot of those studies that they go out and look at the specific upregulation and downregulation of these chemokines, cytokines, and different cell types come up short of directly explaining the relationship. And again, therefore, this allostatic load shouldn't be taken as each component is directly contributing to the immunomodulatory effects or is directly explains the issues and the therefore rise in communicable diseases, but it should be taken to say that part of the population that is impacted more strongly by these stressors in their life and therefore may be able to be measured via allostatic load. We need to pay attention to those. We need to use this as kind of a nice epidemiological method to assess stress and then target our interventions purposefully, knowing that we can save hundreds of millions of dollars to billions of dollars if we can reduce the burden of communicable diseases in certain population subsets, specifically if those population subsets are disadvantaged and otherwise not being necessarily attended to. So that's all I have for you. Thank you very much.